Here we are, live in Chicago again.
Good morning, Bobby.
Hi, Kathy. How are you?
I'm enjoying this whole convention scene, I have to say. It's fun being an interviewer. It's like being Conan or Jimmy Kimmel. Maybe not quite as funny.
Well, the upside down is maybe turning a little upside down, which is great. A good thing.
Yeah.
This morning, we are going to talk to Dr. Peter Gerhardt, who is currently the executive director of Epic School in New Jersey, which is a school that educates children with autism, adolescents with autism. And Dr. Gerhardt has more than 30 years' experience using applied behavior analysis in support of adolescents and adults with autism spectrum disorder. So my scope of practice does not include formal education of children with autism. So I thought it would be really nice to bring Peter in and tell us a little bit about it. And I've heard Peter speak before, and he's really wonderful. He knows a lot. He certainly has written a lot of things and presented nationally and internationally on the topic. He's quite the expert in this field. So I think we're really fortunate to have him here.
That's exciting.
Yeah. And you know what our theme is?
I don't remember. What is our theme?
All right. It is stupid is as stupid does. Remember that from the movie?
Forrest Gump.
You got it.
Yeah. You know what? Stupid has always been a bad word in our house when I was raising my kids. We weren't allowed to use the word stupid.
It's a horrible word. But I think the reason that it came off so well in that movie and the reason that it fits well here is, even though it is such a terrible word, we still discriminate against people about their perceived intelligence. And we judge their intelligence based on all kinds of things that don't make any sense. When in truth, a lot of not very smart things are done by a lot of very smart people. And on the other hand, there are some people who are very challenged or vulnerable who actually do a magnificent job of living their lives, like Forrest Gump.
That's true. There you go.
So I think, you know, that adage from his mom that stupid is stupid does, really helped him to understand that it was really only what you do that's really important and how you do it. And so we're going to chat with Peter about how that occurs in education with adolescents and adults living with autism spectrum disorder.
Great. Look forward to it.
All right. Peter will be here in a minute. So we're welcoming Peter today.
Hello, Peter.
Hi.
Peter Gerhardt is a teacher. Really, I think you are. Whenever I've heard you, I've always heard you and heard you teaching. You teach us all about working with children with autism and how to teach them. And so I know you've got a wonderful resume, but to me, you really are an amazing teacher of both children with autism and behavior analyst.
And actually, I'm quite comfortable with that. I actually think applied behavior analysis made an error when we so distance ourselves from the idea of teaching. That when it really is skill acquisition, no matter what you call it.
Right.
So.
And essentially, we work in a learning theory.
Right.
I mean, ABA is a learning theory.
Right, absolutely.
And all human behavior is learned.
Yep.
So being a teacher is a pretty good thing.
Yeah, I think it's a very good thing.
Yeah. So I know when I've heard you talk previously, the other thing I've always enjoyed about the way that you talk about what we do is that you talk about the practicalities of what people need to learn and why it's important for us not to get caught in our heads and think, oh, well, this is a good thing to teach, as opposed to understanding what does that person really need to teach, what's going to be meaningful and significant to them. So tell us a little bit about that.
You know, I was lucky enough to spend the first half of my career, if not a little bit more, working with adults. And one of the things that happens when you work with adults with autism is you get to spend a lot of time saying, how come nobody taught you this? Why can you tell me all 50 states, but you don't know how to use a public bathroom? Why do you know, like, your addition facts, but don't know how to order a meal at a restaurant? And I think we spend a lot of time teaching things that seem like the right thing, but in the long run have very little impact on one's future life. And we leave the important things completely out of the mix. It's almost like reverse engineering.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like if you get to start with the product, then you can figure out how to get there. If you don't know what the product is, it's really hard to figure out how to get to that point. So by having spent so much time working with adults, it started to become relatively easy to sort of sit back and say, okay, these are the skills that you need.
Yeah.
These are the skills that you don't need.
Yeah.
And let's prioritize these as we move forward.
And it's always been my experience that people who help other people or believe they need to teach other people sometimes get stuck in the small stuff like that, right? And they're not thinking in terms of what is this, what is really meaningful for this person? What's going to make all other behaviors grow in this person?
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And I think, like, there are some, like, reading, if we look at reading, like, I think reading would be a great skill if I could teach everybody to read fluently, so they want to read. I haven't been able to do that with most of the kids I work with, so it's hard, though, to decide, okay, now we have to sort of move beyond this.
Yeah.
You know, at what point, like, but there are other skills where I say, you know what, forget that. Like, don't even bother with it. Like, we can just move. We've been talking now about, you know, I've been an advocate for 15 years for teaching kids just to use credit cards and debit cards instead of money. Like, forget money. Nobody really needs money. We'll just go right to that. Simpler, it's easier. Now we have Apple Pay and Android Pay. And that's going to be the easier thing to go to. Nobody really needs to know that this is a penny, this is a nickel, this is a quarter, this is a dollar, this is... But we spend year after year after year teaching that because we think it's an important...
Mm-hmm.
concept.
So what are some of the ways then in the schools that you work in where you actually teach these things? I'll bet you have a few funny stories about that.
Well, at the Epic School, where I'm the executive director, one of our guiding principles is that we should be successful in the classrooms. We control every variable. We control how many students we have, what our ratio is, how many hours they work, what they work on, what their reinforcement schedule is. Like, that should be a no-brainer.
Yeah.
The real measure of success has to be how well our kids do outside the classroom.
Yeah.
And that's got to be our only measure of success. So we, starting really in elementary-age kids, start to do some community-based instruction. We start to go out in the community and start working on different skill sets. But we also use our building to teach some skill sets. We have a big three-story building that used to be an old convent that we actually purchased a number of years ago and renovated. And so we teach kids to independently navigate the entire building without adult staff.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we can do that safely because we have cameras throughout the building, so we can actually watch kids and make sure that they're doing what they're supposed to do. But otherwise, we end up with a whole group of kids that do things only because their teacher is standing next to them.
Yes.
Even when we say they're doing it independently, they're not doing it independently.
Right.
But doesn't that happen in normal school too? Not normal. That's probably the wrong word. Boy, I'm probably going to get kicked out of the convention for saying that. But you know what I mean? Like the school I went, the typical school I went to, same deal, really. We weren't allowed free access.
Well, but then we, in a typical school with typical children, we know that learning will occur all kinds of places in your life, and
absolutely,
that you're going to pick things up intuitively. If we're talking about children with autism, it's more like they need programming. They need programming.
Gotcha.
And I think the other thing is that even in a typical school nowadays, I could get in a lot of trouble for saying this, but when we put a person, we attach a person to the elbow of a child for whatever reason, we have just lost so many collateral skills that child is no longer learning. Self-reliance, right? Initiation,
we are actually decreasing those behaviors in that person, and they start to become dependent on the person sitting at their elbow. So we have to be very, very careful when we're trying to train up behavior that we're not actually training up the wrong behavior, because we actually assign a person to be there all the time. If the person can't do it without us or someone else, guess what? They don't know it.
Right. And I'll give you a really simple example. In our high school class, because we have cameras, we were able to set up a situation where we knew we were going to do a fire drill. So literally 30 seconds before the fire drill, my staff just casually walked out of the classroom, leaving the students in the classroom. Then the fire alarm went off. Of the six students, only one left the classroom.
Oh, dear.
Now, if we had said, if you had asked any of my staff, like, how independent are they? They would all say they're independent.
Yeah, because if I ask them what to do and the fire alarm goes off, they'll
yes,
be able to
they get up and do it. Yes, because we inadvertently prompt, we say, go get your coat. We do all of this other stuff.
Including stimulus control.
Yes, but we don't look at actual independence.
Okay, but when there was a fire drill in my typical school, the teacher was always in the room when the fire alarm went off.
But once again, you were able to discriminate between the stimulus and your teacher.
Right.
My guys discriminate only to the teacher.
Okay.
That's where they're focusing on, not
and
this
if,
external.
And if the teacher happened to be out of the room for a moment, you all would have gotten
figured it out.
Yes.
You probably would have been fighting with each other to get out the door.
Right.
And a few of you would have started, all of you would have gone. That wouldn't happen.
I would have probably stepped up and organized everybody and been in charge.
Yeah.
Now, I will admit, though, on the flip side, last year I was out to dinner with some friends of mine. And in the middle of dinner at this very nice restaurant, the fire alarm went off. About 30 people in the restaurant. Not a single one of us got up. We looked around. We, like, smelled the air. See if there was, none of us got up. And then the manager came out shortly and said it was a false alarm. It was but I started, like, as a behavior analyst, that bothered me. Like, why? I came to the conclusion that the reason none of us reacted is that probably none of us in that room had any experience where a fire alarm meant there was a fire.
I hear you.
The only experience we have is a fire alarm going off when there's no fire.
That there's a false alarm.
Right. So we really don't learn that response.
But if you'd had some environmental mm-hmm. indicators.
Right. If there was smoke, if there was, yes, we would have been out in a second.
Yeah, absolutely.
And we would have picked up on those so we could leave. That's
right.
Why it's so important that we give sufficient practice under real world conditions.
So what are you going to do next time? Pump smoke into the classroom and then see if the kids get up and go?
We've thought about things like that. There are a lot of different.
That would be how to do it, right?
Yeah, there are a lot of ways.
That context-driven cue.
Yeah, that we could do that. And then. Even if we get our students to respond to the fire drill in our school, how do we make sure that now they graduate and they go to work? How do they? We make sure that they're going to respond
how
to the fire
drill.
How are
they going to generalize it out to the world?
You know, And those are the big questions that I think, you know, behavior analysis truly needs to start addressing. We've gotten very good. We are really amazingly good at teaching sort of independent skills. You know, now it's time that we really have to step up, at least within autism, and look at really context-based skills and look at skills that have some variability to it. The example I always use is if I teach Johnny how to zipper his coat and I have a task analysis for zippering his coat, that task analysis is the exact same task analysis no matter what coat he puts on.
Right.
Doesn't matter.
Right.
If I have a task analysis for grocery shopping, that task analysis not only is different at every store, it's different every time you go to the grocery store because they move stuff around.
That's right.
People stop in front of you. The different cashier is not like multiple. It's so much more variable. And that's where we need to focus as kids get older and not this success in the classroom, which should be a no-brainer anyway.
Yeah. I'm curious about how your work must be with adolescents because Lord knows there's so much going on inside our brains and our bodies when we're in those adolescent years. And if you have some difficulties.
No less with a child with autism, that's for sure.
No, that's what I mean.
Yeah.
So if you have difficulties picking up clues and anyway, I can imagine that it's a difficult
bridge to cross. And I would think, I have family that are facing this right now with someone on the spectrum in their lives and dealing with teenage boys. And I just imagine that there's another level of confusion for parents and teachers that you might not find in a typical
huge.
Yeah. And we as a society, whether it's Canadian or American or even Mexico, I mean, we're afraid to talk about this.
About teaching sex to people?
Yes, or? I did a very Western Hemisphere thing there. we don't like talking about it. We don't like acknowledging that people are sexual beings. While at the same time, half the commercials on TV have a sexual overtone to them.
Right. Well, and this was when we had our discussion about it. The thing of it is that all the urges are there. Mm-hmm. All of the, and those are innate. Those are there whether we acknowledge them or not. And very often, the first thing anybody does is try to punish them, mm-hmm. right? Some aversive consequence for showing them. But that's not just children with autism. That would go across the board with any disability and adults. Adults with disabilities. We're getting better all the time. It's acknowledged. It's a basic human right. We can no longer deny those things mm-hmm. in people. But yeah, if we don't teach it, they learn it from the internet.
Mm-hmm. No, absolutely. It's a.
I had a poor guy who ended up getting into a very weird place with his sexuality because he got it from the internet.
Yeah, and there's some research coming out now with typical kids that because they're not getting sex ed in school, that the internet pornography has become sort of this go-to guide about what is appropriate, what's not appropriate. And it's a really horrible situation because no matter where you stand on the issue of pornography, one thing about it is that it is wholly unrealistic representation of human sexuality.
Absolutely. And now there's so many different ways that it's presented.
Right.
It can be very, very bizarre. And, paraphilia, all kinds of things are going on.
Right. So it just gets incredibly complex. And again, this is an area where I think, my field of behavior analysis can have a significant impact. On one level, sex is just behavior. Mm-hmm. Yes, it's complex, context-based, socially valued behavior, but it's still just behavior. And we can actually work with that. We have to work smarter. We have to work better. Mm-hmm. We have to work earlier on. Most people with developmental disabilities in general only get sort of sex education or intervention after they've done something that's a problem.
Absolutely.
Oh, gosh. Of course.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So it really is sort of like.
That's when everybody says, bring in some sex education.
Yep.
Well, now it's too late.
Yes, right. Because that's like closing the barn door if the horse is run. It doesn't make any sense.
Absolutely.
But that is how 98% of the entire field functions.
Right. And then half the time, half the people dealing with them are in complete denial as to how this sexual behavior is manifesting. Even it can be really crazy.
Right.
So if it's not something that's dealt with on a ABA level with someone like Peter when he's dealing with kids, you're gonna
end up with it, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then. What we're trying to do is reteach behavior, and it's always so much easier to teach behavior than it is to reteach behavior.
Yep.
And the thing with children with autism is that they are so much more affected as well by video modeling. We know that and that's what I run into a lot of, is people who allow children with autism to use media without mitigating what it is they're using. And I'll get them as adults, and they will have learned off of the internet or the television in ways that it's like, holy cow. And how do you pull that back in? Mm-hmm. It's very difficult. You have to be able to set up the contingencies where they can be reinforced. And that means we have to give them those social situations where they might have an opportunity to market themselves to another human being for a connection. Well, let me tell you, it's not that easy. A lot easier to believe in the media.
Right. No, it's we all sort of go for like the least effort possible, and that's the easy way to do it, is you just buy into that fantasy, unfortunately.
Yeah, most of us are completely fucked up when it comes to sex and sexuality anyway.
Yeah, well, that's true.
Again, because of that Western fear of discussion and that sort of thing.
And I have had people who categorically disagreed with me that a person was getting sexual gratification in ways that they shouldn't be doing, and said, no, that's not possible. Their brain, because they have an acquired brain injury or this diagnosis, they can't have sexual feelings. And absolutely,
who would say that?
Mothers.
Yeah, you know, there's always, I think there's like 10% sometimes of the population out there that's just untrainable. And that's the typical population I'm referring to. Like, they just, no matter what, they're not going to get it. Like, they just, you know, and I really just try and avoid them. That I don't have the time to deal with them if they don't understand what I'm trying to do here or why this is important or, you know. I think that 10% is a smaller group than it used to be 50 years ago. I think 50 years ago, it was like 50% of the people were untrainable, typical people. Hopefully.
Like, we don't get it. Is that what I'm saying?
Or it didn't feel, it actually weren't open to teaching. Mostly, that's what we're talking about is this is a person who has a set of conditioned behaviors and has absolutely zero interest in allowing anything to be changed.
Right.
And people used to be much worse that way. Yep. It gets better all the time. And I think that's thanks to behavioral science.
But often misplaced sense of love and protect, they wanted to protect.
Well, it's not just about their children and their sexuality. It's about anything.
It's about anything, really.
Yeah.
But I do think that's a really important point, though, that I do think when we talk about kids growing up, whether it's in sexuality or anything, we have to come to some understanding and acceptance that life is risky, that we're just afraid. And I understand that. I really do. But the fact is, if the IEP goal says that you want them to be independent shopping, that really means I should stop at the door and let them go in on their own. Mm-hmm. Now, then we have to have a discussion. What's the worst that's going to happen? Well, he's going to open a bag of Doritos before he gets to the checkout and eat some Doritos. I'm like, well, like half the other people in the store.
Exactly.
Like, that's not a big deal. Yeah. Like, you know, there may be some other things, but the fact of the matter is we hold people on the spectrum to typically higher standards than we hold ourselves.
Oh, we do.
It's like you have to be at 100% accuracy across three environments with five staff. And it's, fuck up every day.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's not a good day if I don't, because that meant I didn't take any risk. I didn't try anything different, you know?
Absolutely.
But we so don't even start to understand how to do this. And I get it. I get it's a complex cognitive, although I shouldn't say that. It's a complex task for someone to learn how to assess risk. But how I think we control risk when we look at people out in the community is that we work to build community around them. I think if you go to that same grocery store every Tuesday at the same time, about 70% of the people there are the same people there.
That's true.
And now they know you.
Right.
And now they're willing to help you. And now if you do something that's not, like, they're going to help. Like, they'll stand up and they'll, you know, if someone comes along that they don't recognize and tries to tell you to do something, like, they'll step in.
Yeah.
Because you are part of their community.
Yeah.
You know, it's when we keep people isolated.
Absolutely.
That they're at their riskiest.
Absolutely.
But when we get down to intimacy, like, you're not going into the store with them.
You know, there are countries in Europe that actually have care workers who provide intimacy.
It's like that movie with Helen Hunt.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but I mean,
we have them. They're just illegal here.
And then it is risky for us to allow them to
all of us our intimate encounters were risky and continue to be so, like, you know. And
boy, this is a whole nother podcast.
I'm getting
it could get into a whole different Right. But the fact is, life is risky. And so minimally, I think we need to, starting around the age of 7 or 8, start having a discussion about what is the acceptable level of risk. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know what? Typical 7 or 8 year old kids fall off their bike.
Yeah.
It happens. They scratch, like they do that. You know, so if you're going to tell me that you don't want to learn how to ride a bike because you might fall, I think that's the wrong reason.
Yeah.
If you say you don't want to learn how to ride a bike because you're afraid that he won't know how to stop, that he won't know. Yeah. Well, we can work on him stopping and obeying like those. But don't tell me that it's because, you know, we so overprotect kids that they don't even get the opportunity to try things that they might really like and benefit from.
Right. And here I'll extrapolate again. That's not just kids. That's anybody with a label or diagnosis that somehow stigmatizes them as not being able to manage themselves.
Yes. No, I have a friend
and
who was...
And we prevent so much learning.
Yep. Yeah, I have a friend who was telling me that her brother, who has a Down syndrome label, is married to a woman with an intellectual disability. They live in... it's like a supervised living. They're not allowed to walk around the block independently.
What?
Because they're out of the sight of the staff, within sight of the staff, when they're in community at all time. And like, but they're married.
Please.
They're like people had enough respect for them to say you can't get married to walk around the block.
But I mean, and you'd see that all the time, all these restrictive practices, when all it takes is some teaching.
Right.
It's targeted teaching. That's what they need. They don't need restriction.
Right. I mean, and we have so much actually in terms of technology today that we can actually, like if this young man and his wife, if they had a smartphone that was, you know, GPS activated, like, you know, plus I'm sure you could call him and say, where are you? Like, I mean, there are so many normative things that we could do today to increase safety that it's absurd that we don't consider this much broader spectrum of intervention that we still sort of narrow cast into, like, let's do math, let's do reading, let's do writing, let's do numbers, let's do, you know.
Yeah.
When life is about much more than that.
And so many young adults I deal with, so many, honestly, the majority would always say to me, all I want is to be normal. I just want to be treated like I'm normal. They're so, so tired of this, you know, this bubble of stigma around them, and they can't be like everybody else. And their peers in typical schools are bullying them, right? It's not like they have a community of peers. They don't.
Right. But, you know, the Big Bang Theory is a big hit on TV.
Yeah, that's been nice.
And it's like, there's always the general assumption that Sheldon, you know, would have had a diagnosis of Asperger's syndrome, although they all got cured with DSM-5, but that's besides the point.
So would most ABAs.
Yeah, that's very true. but I think from a professional point of view, the most interesting part of the show is how the three other people and the four other people now, you know, they adapt to him.
Yeah.
Like, they want to be his friend, so they're going to change their behavior to best support him.
Yes.
Where I think 25 years ago, it would have been about changing his behavior.
Absolutely.
Now we're really starting to look at this. What's the middle ground here?
Mm-hmm.
You know, a friend of mine, and I've said this before, on the spectrum, very verbal woman who had a very difficult encounter one time with a new doctor, and came back to a support group we were running, and we did some role play about how she could have handled it. And in the middle of the role play, she turned to me and said, you know what, if you typical people have all the skills, why don't you adapt for a while? Damn it. Why is it always my fault?
Right on, baby.
Good for her.
Yeah. And she said, if I was a wheelchair user, you wouldn't say, I'd love to hire you, but learn to walk first. Why do you keep telling me I need more social skills? And I said, that's a really good point. You know, there has to get to a point where we typical people pick up the slack.
Absolutely.
Where we say, you know what?
Our work is to facilitate for other people.
Right.
In general, in our lives,
right.
Our work is to facilitate for other people.
Yeah.
And in our communities, we need to be inclusive and say, oh, there's a person I need to facilitate for. They could use a little help.
Yeah. Right. And that in no way means that, like, people on the spectrum aren't lifelong learners. They are.
Yeah. Just like everyone else.
But everybody else is, too. So we can...
Exactly.
Accommodate in different ways. It doesn't always have to be.
Right. And we don't need to isolate them in groups among themselves. Often with my clients, they very much do not enjoy that. You know, they prefer to be out in the world.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So
it must be a good time to be an ABA specialist, is it?
It is, actually. I mean, this is the first time that we've actually had a sort of a profession. Before it was always an academic field.
Yes.
You know, and now you can be a BCBA. And in many, not many states, but quite a few states now, you can get a license to be a behavioral analyst. You can be a licensed behavioral analyst. So it's,
yeah, in BC, actually, we're going to have that this summer.
Yeah.
The College of Psychologists.
Yeah, I mean, it's a brave new world, which I think is really good. I think it's also scary. Because I think we've grown an awful lot in a very short period of time.
Yes.
And I think we haven't really hit all the growing pains yet. And I think that that's going to be something that the field's going to have to deal with.
Right.
But I think any profession going through this would have to deal with it. I don't think it's specific to us.
Yes. But even that growth is indicative of the fact that our time has come.
Right.
I mean, it really has.
Right.
Well, our view of how to do things is working better than pretty much anything else.
Right.
And society, typical people like me, are more willing to be accepting of the person on the spectrum in my Starbucks making me.
I work with neurotypical people too. You're also more willing to say, this is a behavioral thing that I can and should change. Whereas there was in Skinner's day, that notion was completely against the notion of free will.
Right.
It was considered to be, just so, so wrong. And he was really, people hated Skinner because of that. Because he flew right in the face of the notion of free will. And prior to that time, that's where all those people with all those conditioned behaviors who said, I am who I am and there is no changing me and don't you even try, came from. But now I find, the younger the person, the more open they are to understanding that everything is related to everything else, changeable, and can be managed differently if it's not working well.
Right.
Because they have much more technical way of looking at things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh. Yeah. And one of the things that I've been working, I just did a staff training at the upper school. And also did a parents training on this. Just the idea that ABA is such a big field.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's massive. You know, and the stuff that's going on in behavioral medicine, that's going on in behavioral gerontology. In every area, sports behavioral science.
We just talked to Rob about traffic.
Yeah, right. Okay. Right. It is huge, but we get the most press for for autism. But I think our biggest impacts have been outside of autism.
Those because we can't see those. Those are the ones that you're doing secretly
behind
those screens while you're watching.
Well, it's also because it's an autism epidemic at the moment, and it's garnered a lot of attention, whereas a lot of the other disabilities or other issues, they've always been around, right? The sort of, even the typical people that I deal with, their issues, they've always been around. There's been treatments for them for 100 years,
right?
Autism has a lot of attention because it's different, and it's an epidemic. I mean, obviously, the spectrum existed before.
Yes.
Obviously.
Right,
we all knew.
Right. I said it's an epidemic of diagnosis.
Absolutely.
What it is.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway, we should wrap up and let you go
get
on to the rest of the conference. But it's been wonderful talking to you.
This has been a great joy. I've thoroughly enjoyed myself.
Oh, it was a great joy. It's very exciting for us.
Fabulous.
I never cease to be amazed by you people,
you gotta stop saying you people. I think you're one
you
of us
people.
By now.
Yeah.
I don't have the letters after my name.
Yeah, but you're an honorary though.
They're all bless you. Thank you very much.
Cool. Well, thank you very much.
I love that guy. He was wonderful. Huh?
Everything that he had to say made so much sense. And again, you know, that's the whole business of ABA, that it's common sense. And when you hear about the kinds of things that he's talking about, at first, as somebody who's gone through the traditional school system, and I was a big believer in teaching your kids to read and
learning about money, all the things that he was saying at first kind of got my back up a bit. And then I thought, the guy's absolutely right. If you have any sort of challenge at all, and really you just want to navigate your way through everyday life,
just like everyone else,
then why spend all of this time in school teaching stuff that isn't really going to help enhance their lives? I pretty much figure that every autistic child will eventually know that yellow is yellow and pink is pink. They don't have to spend a whole lot of time in the school looking at, but as you said, you know, they need to be able to learn how to go to the bathroom. And as he said, dealing with adults saying, how come no one ever taught you this?
Yeah.
And my very, very brief experience with people that are on that spectrum is that they just need to be shown. Once you show them how to do something, it's pretty much locked in.
Oh God, yes. They have wonderful rule governed behaviors, and it is pretty much locked in. And that's why I think our adage is so appropriate or apropos, because the truth is that what we need to do is we need to recognize that some people who live with challenges in that regard are heroes in their own lives, you know, because they aren't in any way, shape, or form stupid.
No.
And what they do, it's really up to us. It's really up to us to make sure that what they do is what they need to do and is appreciated and meaningful to them and appreciated and meaningful to us.
Yeah, it was a good talk.
It really was, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.